Chapter 38. Write me that cruel, cruel letter that nearly killed me. Apostrophe apostrophe, Cytherea. Why, you had grown to love like Mr. Manston, and how could you be anything to me, or care for me? Surely I acted naturally? Apostrophe apostrophe, oh no, never. I loved you only you, not him, always you. Till lately. Dot dot dot, I try to love him now. Apostrophe, but that can't be correct. Miss Alcliffe told me that he wanted to hear no more of me, proved it to me. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Edward. Never, she couldn't. Apostrophe, she did, Cytherea. And she sent me a love letter, you wrote to Mr. Manston. Apostrophe apostrophe, a love letter I wrote? Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, a love letter. You could not meet him just then. You said you were sorry, but the emotion you had felt with him made you forgetful of realities. Apostrophe apostrophe, the strife of thought in the unhappy girl who listened to this distortion of her meaning, could find no vent in words. And then there followed the slow revelation in return, bringing with it all the misery of an explanation which comes too late. The question whether Miss Alcliffe were schemer or dupe was almost passed over by Cytherea, under the immediate oppressiveness of her despair in the sense that her position was irretrievable. Not so Springrove. He saw through all the cunning half-misrepresentations, worse than downright lies, which had just been sufficient to turn the scale both with him and with her, and from the bottom of his soul he cursed the woman and man who had brought all this agony upon him and his love. But he could not add more misery to the future of the poor child by revealing too much. The whole scheme she should never know. I was indifferent to my own future, apostrophe Edward said, apostrophe, and was urged to promise adherence to my engagement with my cousin Adelaide by Miss Alcliffe. Now you are married, I cannot tell you how, but it was on account of my father. Being forbidden to think of you, what did I care about anything? My new thought, that you still loved me, was first raised by what my father said in the letter announcing my cousin's marriage. He said that, although you were to be married on old Christmas Day, that is tomorrow, he had noticed your appearance with pity. He thought you loved me still. It was enough for me. I came down by the earliest morning train, thinking I could see you sometime today, the day, as I thought, before your marriage, hoping, but hardly daring to hope, that you might be induced to marry me. I hurried from the station. When I reached the village I saw idlers about the church, and the private gate leading to the house open. I ran into the church by the small door, and saw you come out of the vestry. I was too late. I have now told you. I was compelled to tell you. Oh, my lost darling, now I shall live content or die content. Apostrophe apostrophe, I am to blame, Edward, I am, apostrophe she said mournfully. I was taught to dread pauperism. My nights were made sleepless. There was continually reiterated in my ears till I believed it, the world, and its ways have a certain worth, and to press a point where these oppose were a simple policy. But I will say nothing about who influenced, who persuaded. The act is mine, after all. Edward, I married to escape dependence for my bread upon the whim of Miss Alcliffe, or others like her. It was clearly represented to me that dependence is bearable if we have another place which we can call home. But to be a dependent, and to have no other spot for the heart to anchor upon, oh, it is mournful and harassing, dot dot dot, but that without which all persuasion would have been as air, was added by my miserable conviction that you were false, that did it, that turned me. You were to be considered as nobody to me, and Mr. Manston was invariably kind. Well, the deed is done, I must abide by it. I shall never let him know that I do not love him, never. If things had only remained as they seemed to be, if you had really forgotten me, and married another woman, I could have borne it better. I wish I did not know the truth as I know it now. But our life, what is it? Let us be brave, Edward, and live out our few remaining years with dignity. They will not be long. Oh, I hope they will not be long. Dot dot now, goodbye, goodbye. apostrophe apostrophe, I wish I could be near and touch you once, just once, apostrophe said Springrove, in a voice which he vainly endeavored to keep firm and clear. They looked at the river, then into it. A shoal of minnows was floating over the sandy bottom, like the black dashes on Miniver. Though narrow, the stream was deep, and there was no bridge. Cytherea, reach out your hand, that I may just touch it with mine. Apostrophe apostrophe, she stepped to the brink, and stretched out her hand and fingers towards his, but not into them. The river was too wide. Never mind, apostrophe said Cytherea, her voice broken by agitation, I must be going. God bless and keep you, my Edward. God bless you. Apostrophe, I must touch you, I must press your hand, apostrophe he said. They came near, 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 still their fingers met. There was a long firm clasp, so close and still that each hand could feel the other's pulse throbbing beside its own. My Cytherea, my stolen pet lamb. Apostrophe, she glanced a mute farewell from her large perturbed eyes, turned, and ran up the garden without looking back. All was over between them. The river flowed on as quietly and obtusely as ever, and the minnows gathered again in their favorite spot, as if they had never been disturbed. Nobody indoors guessed from her countenance and bearing that her heart was near to breaking with the intensity of the misery which gnawed there. At these times a woman does not faint, or weep, or scream, as she will in the moment of sudden shocks. When lanced by a mental agony of such refined and special torture that it is indescribable by men's words, she moves among her acquaintances much as before, and contrives so to cast her actions in the old molds, that she is only considered to be rather duller than usual. 5. Half past 2 to 5 o'clock p.m. Owen accompanied the newly married couple to the railway station, and in his anxiety to see the last of his sister, left the brougham and stood upon his crutches, whilst the train was starting. When the husband and wife were about to enter the railway carriage, they saw one of the porters looking frequently and furtively at them. He was pale, and apparently very ill. Look at that poor sick man, apostrophe said Cytherea compassionately, surely he ought not to be here. Apostrophe apostrophe, he's been very queer today, madam, very queer, apostrophe another porter answered. He do hardly hear when he's spoken to, and he seem giddy, or as if something was on his mind. He's been like it for this month past, but nothing so bad as he is today. Apostrophe apostrophe, poor thing. Apostrophe apostrophe, she could not resist an innate desire to do some just thing on this most deceitful and wretched day of her life. Going up to him, she gave him money, and told him to send to the old manor house for wine, or whatever he wanted. The train moved off as the trembling man was murmuring his incoherent thanks. Owen waved his hand. Cytherea smiled back to him, as if it were unknown to her that she wept all the while. Owen was driven back to the old house. But he could not rest in the lonely place. His conscience began to reproach him for having forced on the marriage of his sister with a little too much peremptoriness. Taking up his crutches he went out of doors, and wandered about the muddy roads with no object in view save that of getting rid of time. The clouds which had hung so low, and densely during the day cleared from the west just now as the sun was setting, calling forth a weekly twitter from a few small birds. Owen crawled down the path to the waterfall, and lingered there about till the solitude of the place oppressed him, when he turned back, and into the road to the village. He was sad. He said to himself, if there is ever any meaning in those heavy feelings which are called presentiments and I don't believe there is, there will be in mine today. ... Poor little Cytherea. Apostrophe, at that moment the last low rays of the sun touched the head and shoulders of a man who was approaching, and showed him up to Owen's view. It was old Mr. Springrove. They had grown familiar with each other by reason of Owen's visits to Knapwater during the past year. The farmer inquired how Owen's foot was progressing, and was glad to see him so nimble again. How is your son? Apostrophe apostrophe said Owen mechanically. He is at home, sitting by the fire, said the farmer, in a sad voice. This morning he slipped indoors from God knows where, and there he sits and mopes, and thinks, and presses his head so hard, that I can't help feeling for him. Is he married? Said Owen. Cytherea had feared to tell him of the interview in the garden. No. I can't quite understand how the matter rests. Edward too, who started with such promise, that he should now have become such a careless fellow not a month in one place. There, Mr. Gray, I know what it is mainly owing to. If it hadn't been for that hard affair, he might have done, but the less said about him the better. I don't know what we should have done, if Miss Aldcliffe had insisted upon the conditions of the leases. Your brother-in-law, the steward, had a hand in making it light for us, I know, and I heartily thank him for it. He ceased speaking, and looked round at the sky. Have you heard what's happened? He said suddenly. I was just coming out to learn about it. I haven't heard of anything. It is something very serious, though I don't know what. All I know, is what I heard a man call out. I know that it very much concerns somebody who lives in the parish. It seems singular enough, even to minds who have no dim beliefs in adumbration and presentiment, that at that moment not the shadow of a thought crossed Owen's mind, that the somebody whom the matter concerned might be himself, or any belonging to him. The event about to transpire was as portentous to the woman whose welfare was more dear to him than his own, as any, short of death itself, could possibly be. And ever afterwards, when he considered the effect of the knowledge the next half hour conveyed to his brain, even his practical good sense could not refrain from wonder that he should have walked toward the village, after hearing those words of the farmer, in so leisurely and unconcerned a way. How unutterably mean must my intelligence have appeared to the eye of a foreseeing God, he frequently said in after time. Columbus, on the eve of his discovery of a world, was not so contemptibly unaware. After a few additional words of commonplace the farmer left him, and, as has been said, Owen proceeded slowly and indifferently towards the village. The laboring men had just left work, and passed the park gate, which opened into the street as Owen came down towards it. They went along in a drift, earnestly talking, and were finally about to turn in at their respective doorways. But upon seeing him, they looked significantly at one another, and paused. He came into the road, on that side of the village green which was opposite the row of cottages, and turned round to the right. When Owen turned, all eyes turned. One or two men went hurriedly indoors, and afterwards appeared at the doorstep with their wives, who also contemplated him, talking as they looked. They seemed uncertain how to act in some matter. If they want me, surely they will call me, he thought, wondering more and more. He could no longer doubt that he was connected with the subject of their discourse. The first who approached him was a boy. What has occurred? Said Owen. Oh, a man I got crazy religious, and sent for the passon. Is that all? Yes, sir. He wished he was dead, he said, and he's almost out of his mind why wishing it so much. That was before Mr. Ronham came. Who is he? Said Owen. Joseph Chinney, one of the railway porters. He used to be night porter. The man who was ill this afternoon. By the way, he was told to come to the old house for something, but he hasn't been. But has anything else happened, anything that concerns the wedding today? No, sir. Concluding that the connection which had seemed to be traced between himself and the event must in some way have arisen from Cytherea's friendliness towards the man, Owen turned about and went homewards in a much quieter frame of mind, yet scarcely satisfied with the solution. The route he had chosen led through the dairy yard, and he opened the gate. 5 minutes before this point of time, Edward Springrove was looking over one of his father's fields at an outlying hamlet of 3 or 4 cottages some mile and a half distant. A turnpike gate was close by the gate of the field. The carrier to Casterbridge came up as Edward stepped into the road and jumped down from the van to pay toll. He recognized Springrove. "This is a pretty set to in your place, sir," apostrophe he said. "You don't know about it, I suppose?" Apostrophe apostrophe what? Apostrophe apostrophe said Springrove. The carrier paid his dues, came up to Edward, and spoke 10 words in a confidential whisper. Then sprang upon the shafts of his vehicle, gave a clinching nod of significance to Springrove, and rattled away. Edward turned pale with the intelligence. His first thought was, "Bring her home." Apostrophe apostrophe, the next did Owen Gray know what had been discovered? He probably did by that time, but no risks of probability must be run by a woman he loved dearer than all the world besides. He would at any rate make perfectly sure that her brother was in possession of the knowledge, by telling it him with his own lips. Off he ran in the direction of the old manor house. The path was across arable land, and was plowed up with the rest. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.